Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and I remember hearing that theme song and feeling a very happy feeling with my grandmother and I watching that show, and I remember seeing Sissy on that show and saying, "Grandma, she is such a doll. I love her." And I think we all felt that way, and so we're honored. We'll be back in a moment with Kathy Garver, who played Sissy on that show and has gone on to a career in voiceover and has some books coming out as well. So we're looking forward to hearing how she survived Sissy, which will be the title of her new book, Surviving Sissy. We'll be back in about 20 seconds with Kathy Garver. Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome Kathy Garver.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. Yes, that music brings a smile to my face as well.
Wow, what a cast. And you had done some things in Hollywood prior. I remember the Ten Commandments. I'd heard you were an extra and then got bumped up to some lines in that scene where I think the Egyptians were chasing the Israelites. Was my memory correct on that?
Your rumor is correct. I was hired. This is not the silent version of the Ten Commandments, which was also directed by C.B. DeMille, but the wonderful one with Charlton Heston that is on every Easter and also in colored DVD. Yes, I was just supposed to be riding in a little wagon with a lamb on my lap during the Exodus, and we had been rehearsing all day, and I was all ready for my part. And I think the lamb was a little nervous because he let a little water go onto my striped costume.
Oh,
but all
my.
Of a sudden, I hear this big voice yell out, "Don't let that little girl's face get in the camera." And I said, "Uh-oh, what did I do? Is it because of that dumb lamb? And is that God? It's coming from above." We are doing the Ten Commandments, but the AD came over and covered me up with a little blanket, and I still did my scene. And after it was over, I saw this big crane descend, and sitting up there was not God, but Cecil B. DeMille. So we chatted, and he personally wrote scenes into the movie for me.
Wow, that must have been so
now,
funny.
I think one of the reasons.
Girl.
Oh, I was just like 6-7 years old when we were shooting. I was just a tiny girl. But I think this was part of his MO. He shot these great big epics, and to make them relatable for the audience, he would like write in scenes like mine, or the woman that almost got crushed by the wall, or like my friend Mimi Gibson, who was in the show as well, that was kind of like my age saying, "Grandfather, look," you know. So that's the rumor was correct, and I started out as just an extra and then came to be a principal and worked on the movie for like 2 months.
Wow, what a baptism into Hollywood filmmaking with such a master. It's so funny because that movie came out last night. We had a friend of ours, Bob, who's edited a bunch of Oscar-winning films, and a few friends over, and he's from a Jewish background. My childhood was Catholic, and so we were talking about Moses, and the next thing we were reading the Parting of the Red Sea story and talking about our thoughts on the whole Moses story, and that's such an amazing beginning. Now, did I read you were in college when you auditioned for the role that so many people have this just warm feelings and probably want to hug you when they see you in public of Sissy. You were studying in school at the time?
Right. After Ten Commandments, I went on to roles in, like, radio and stage and film and TV, so I had quite a background. And then I started UCLA, and I was studying speech, and I got a call from my agent, and they were doing a new series called Family Affair, and it was all cast except for one part. And that was the part of the teenage sister. Now, actually, it had already been cast, but the girl went to Europe and had gained a lot of weight and hadn't signed the contract. So my agent set up a meeting for me to meet the producer, and she says, everything's fine. The only thing is they want a blonde. I said, they'd like blue eyes, but the brown eyes are okay. And I said, oh, okay. Now, at the time, and you can well imagine playing the slave in Ten Commandments, I had dark hair and dark eyes, and my wonderful mother came over with a can of Streaks and Tips, which was the stuff in the 60s that you could spray in your hair to change the color. Well, she sprayed and sprayed and sprayed, and then it was like I was wearing a helmet. And we went on the interview, and things were actually going pretty well. And then he said, what's wrong with your hair? I said, my hair. And he says, yes, it's turning green. And I said,
oh no.
Well, are you not doing a remake of the boy with green hair to the girl with green hair? He said, well, no, but that's okay. So anyway, that was my first audition with them.
Wow. It changed your life, I imagine. I mean, did you have to put school on hold? And was it a shift in just, you know, you're going out and people are recognizing you, and was it a feeling of your life changing all of a sudden?
Absolutely. Because while I was going to UCLA and I was living in the sorority, I would do guest spots, like on Dr. Kildare and the shows that were going on at the time. But I had to stop my schooling because this was a full-time gig. And so we started actually filming in the summer of 66. And when the show debuted in September, it was like an instant hit. And so that was nice. But what was strange, I remember it vividly, too. I was in Macy's, and I was on the escalator, and this woman said, oh, I saw you last night. Oh, you were so good. Could I have your autograph? Well, that was such an odd thing for someone to ask me, even though I had worked steadily since the age of seven. So I said, okay. I was kind of shy. And then I said, well, why do they want my autograph? And then it was either a publicist or a friend said, well, it's like you're giving them a present. So as soon as I got that straight in my mind, it was fine.
That's so interesting. There's some casting directors that cast a lot of Ron Howard's films. I remember them saying there's a shift when an actor goes from working actor, which you were before, to recognizable name actor, you know, and, you know, that was probably startling when they asked you the first time, huh, for your autograph.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, this is one of the reasons that so many of the child stars get, you know, in some type of maybe psychological trouble or other kinds of trouble. Disney now has a therapist and that the kids have to go to each week. And they also film, like, 3 years in 1 year. So I think one of the problems with Anissa Jones, who is the most adorable and wonderful child on Family Affair, who played the part of Buffy, they kept her so young and with the pigtails and the really short skirts and everything. And she was 14 when the show ended, and she was still wearing the pigtails and having the doll. And so when it stopped, she said, well, I never wanted to do another thing on TV or film or anything. It's hard.
Yeah, that was so tragic. I remember just so shocked when we'd heard that she died. I guess it was an accidental overdose, and that must have hit you because you were a big sister to her on in TV, and I imagine just even, you know, offset to some extent.
Oh, yeah. We used to do sleepovers, and I remember going to her 18th birthday party down in Playa del Rey, where she lived in California, and her mom said, Kathy, can you took me aside and said, can you spend some more time with Anissa, because I'm worried and I think that she's in the wrong crowd. And I said, I would be delighted to, but I am leaving. That's my dog. I'm leaving on Monday to go do for 6 weeks to do My Fair Lady musical on the East Coast. Well, unfortunately, it was during that time when she overdosed. So it was obviously a horrible tragedy.
It was so shocking. And it's interesting because, you know, you hear these talks about all this tragedy and the Kennedys and the Kennedy curse. And when I think about Family Affair, such a warm show, but there was, you know, in the real world, a lot of tragedy with Anissa and Johnny had his struggles that he went through recovery and came through, and Brian Keith with him and his daughter. And so your character on the show always hit me as kind of the safe, grounded one. Like if Jody and Buffy were in trouble and you showed up, I was like, oh, Sissy will keep them on the right track. So in real life, you also seem to have, been more grounded or come through better. Like the title of your upcoming book, Surviving Sissy, you seem to have survived unscathed compared to some of the others.
I still have a little some ticks along the way, but yes. And in my book, and actually I'm having two books come out this year, and one is like ex-child star secret society, where are they now and how did they get there? Because I have been so close to the child stars, and so many of them are still my friends. I was very fortunate in the fact that I had a mom and a dad and two big brothers and a sister, and they grounded me. My mother saved every single penny I made. They did not take the money to pay for the other kids or for the mortgage or anything else and put that extra added pressure on perhaps a child who, is trying to support the family, which, is another layer of hardship on a child actor. So they didn't spend my money. Even when I was a child and I was going to school doing Ten Commandments or these guest stars and all the other things, my mom said, oh, don't tell them where you are. You're just out, and let it go with that. So it tried to give me as normal a life as possible. And I thank them to this day. I was very blessed. So, and I still have a big spiritual connection. So if I start to, go off a path that would probably not be conducive to good mental health or psychological health, et cetera, I said, God, I'm going to put it in your hands. Or if I have something I need, put it in a promise box, et cetera. Also, I was able to complete my college education, not only get a bachelor from UCLA in speech and psychology, but also a master's degree in theater arts. So I have, developed a lot of skills, which also helped. Sometimes child actors can only act. Some of them don't even, graduate from high school. But I was fortunate in the fact that I had a good education.
Wow. So you had your family, you had your faith, you continued to educate yourself, you have, what an example, because all the meltdowns we hear even in the news, the Justin Bieber, who's had so much, fame and money so quick and having his struggles, and I'm really grateful to hear that what you said about Disney having a therapist and trying to create more spiritual support for these kids, and I really can't wait for your book on the ex-child stars as well as Surviving Sissy. I guess we should keep in touch and look for that on Amazon for both of those. Would you say maybe, I think, was it fall? Were you thinking fall release for the books?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the books will be released in the fall, and you can get them on Amazon.com. And I will also do an audio book of Surviving Sissy. And that,
oh, great.
Yeah, and that can be on Amazon.com as well, or Audible. And also, if people would like me to sign the book, they can go to my website, which is KathyGarver.com, KathyGarver.com. And my other book, The Family Affair Cookbook, is also on my site as well as Amazon and Audible.
Yeah, the Family Affair Cookbook is great for those of you listening, because I know a lot of you tuning in, like me, are fans of the show. And Kathy, you did such a good job blending the anecdotal stories and the photos of the show with recipes. And a lot of these recipes kind of bring back that, you know, more simpler time of the 60s, some of the popular recipes from that time, huh?
Yes, and every time a food was mentioned on the series, I have a recipe to go along with it, and then each character has his or her own chapter. So the kids have theirs, Buffy and Jody, very simple recipes, ants on a beam, et cetera, and Mr. French has gourmet cuisine, and as you say, foods of the time, like with pheasant and very gourmet recipes. I have my Sissy Sizzles recipe that can be sizzling macaroni, and then Uncle Bill has a chapter as well, which is potent potables, how to mix Manhattan, since we were supposed to be from New York, and martinis, etc.
Oh, that's fantastic. KathyGarver.com, you can get that cookbook, the Family Affair Cookbook. And I think about all the characters and how you pay tribute to them in the cookbook. What are your memories? I heard that Brian Keith and Sebastian Cabot had really different kind of acting styles. That I don't know if that's true or not. That Sebastian Cabot was more classically trained theatrical, and Brian Keith, it just kind of came easy to him. He didn't quite have that concentrated approach to reviewing everything, the lines so thoroughly or whatever. What are your memories of the rest of the cast?
Well, that's very true. And Sebastian, who was from England, and he was like one of those who never really went on to school, but he got a lot of real-life experience as being a driver and met a very famous English actor at the time. And so he got many hints from him. And then had an English approach. I had also gone to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London and had studied the way that the English approach acting and their work, which is very much of scene analysis and character analysis and speech and diction and how to approach a part and attitude. So it was almost an academic approach, and that is the approach that Sebastian had. Now, Brian Keith had been working even also as a child, because his parents, Robert Keith, would take him along when they were on the stage, so he really got the fundamentals from his parents. But he was also very American and much more into a Stanislavski kind of approach, where you go from the moment and you let the moment guide you. So Sebastian, when we were doing Family Affair, he would study every word and he would get it all right. And he had a little problem memorizing the line, so he was determined. He was going to get every single word correct and study over the weekend, and he'd come back and he'd go over the dialogue with the dialogue coach, all prepped for his scene. Brian, on the other hand, would come in, get the scenes for the day, say, okay, what are we doing today? And take like 5 minutes, I said, okay, let's go. So it actually provided quite a nice dynamic between the two. And
yeah,
I think added to
their
characters. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, that it really fits, you know, Mr. French being the, the uptight kind of British butler, and Uncle Bill, just the scenes with him and you guys, it was just so touching. It felt so real, and being a father to the fatherless, and I think that was such an emotional fulcrum to drawing our hearts into the show. So it really did fit the characters.
Yes, he was very real and relaxed, as you say, and was really able to put that across, and those were his real emotions. He loved kids. He just loved kids. He wasn't crazy sometimes about adults, and he'd tell them so on the set. But, you know, for children, that was really very heartfelt moments and very real.
And then you also have hosted your own show. Was that really interesting because it being in front of the camera so much, you know, as an actress? And then did it give you another kind of benefit of another side of things now that you, you know, have been out interviewing other actors?
Yes, in a way. I mean, I had certainly a lot of commonality when we would interview other people. My show was called Backstage with Barry and Kathy, and we did it up in San Francisco. And Barry Barsamian, who used to be the story editor for a very posh magazine up here, he had a lot of society contacts as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we would interview people like that, and then people like my friends, like John Provost from Timmy from Lassie and Paul Peterson from the Donna Reed Show and A Minor Consideration. We actually did the last interview with Jane Russell.
Wow.
The lovely movie star went down to Santa Maria where she was living and interviewed her. But I think by knowing acting and hopefully we were able to ask some pointed questions, some interesting questions. I remember one interview with Patty Duke, whom I'd had worked with as a child when she did the, well, as a teenager, when she did the Patty Duke show. And she was in San Francisco doing the part of Madame Morrible in Wicked. And this was like just a couple years ago. I think she was 64, and I was saying, Patty. And she wears these great big costumes and very heavy hats. And I said, how can you do this, you know, night after night and do the matinees? And she looked straight at me, paused, and said, determination. And it's true. If you're, and that's really kind of the thesis of my surviving sissy. To survive, you have to persevere. You have to be determined. And it helps if you have some faith in a higher being.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, I've often said that God's like the master artist, the master director, and our creativity is a part of God's creativity. And so you really have kept, you know, that spiritual connection. And I'm glad you're doing a voice version, an audio version of your book, because I know that's another, you know, another tool in your toolbox that you have become a very prolific voiceover artist. Do you like the voiceover in the sense that you can you don't have to quite worry about, you know, putting on your Sunday best, and you can just kind of do it, you know, casually if you want? Has that been a fun transition as well to do more of that?
It is, and the voiceover world has just changed and keeps on changing quite a bit. And when I first started voiceover, we'd go into the agents and do an interview, or they would fly me, like, to Michigan, where Brilliance Audio is, or Zondervan is. And now, practically everyone who is working voiceover artist has their own home studio. So, indeed, one can go in their flannel pajamas and, you know, go in front of the mic, and it's very casual. It's very relaxed. I actually put on my sweatpants for you, but that was just a little while ago, and I still had my my jammies on before I said, oh, now I really should get dressed.
I'll confess I'm in my jammies right now, so that's the great thing about us not having to be photographed.
I've done 80 books, 80 audio books, and I've four-time audio award-winning. For a time I was a VP of Edutainment for Kids, and we had the Richard Scarry license, and so we did tapes and we did toys and plush animals, and I very much like the children's market. I'm pretty PG the whole way. I just did a movie called Mom, Murder, and Me, where I played Mom, and it's just a delightful PG movie, fun. There are a couple of people that get killed, but you really don't see them. And we had a great time doing it, and we just premiered that last week, and the audiences just loved it. I really don't think you have to insult people and have violence and, you know, all of this to make a really creative, inspiring, entertaining movie. or film,
yeah,
or tape, or audiobook, or video game.
Yeah, it's really so much more creative to leave something to the imagination and not be so explicit.
Well, yes, and like even The Wolf of Wall Street, I only saw some of it, and SA Screen Actors Guild, you know, sends out the discs, and I'm watching the first 45 minutes of this movie, and I said, well, I guess they didn't really have to think too hard about the lines they were going to say, because it's F this, F that, and F the other thing.
Yeah.
They had about 100 of those, so, well, yeah, they really only had to write a two-hour movie, because the other ones were all expletives.
yeah, and I think myself as a writer of films and director of films, how unrealistic it is, because every character in the world doesn't talk like that, but so many of these films, you know, you can tell it's the same writer putting it in the mouth of every character, because, you know, a few people in life talk like that, but not everyone, you know. So
that's
even
right.
From a dialogue
and even
standpoint.
Those, yeah. And even those people that do talk like that don't talk like that incessantly,
mm-hmm,
I don't think. Well, maybe they do, but, you know, not as many that I think are, you know, portrayed today.
Yeah, I get a lot of scripts sent to me, and a lot anymore, so many times I say no to a lot of even reading them, because it's just too much to read, and if it's not worth the time. But sometimes I'll go through scripts, and it's like that, and I'm thinking, you know, what world do you live in that everybody from age 8 to 80 is dropping F-bombs every other word, you know? This isn't real life. This is...
Yeah.
But thank you for, you know, just giving such great entertainment for the family on so many venues, you know, the audiobooks and the TV and film work. And it's been such a, you know, such a blessing to us. And, you know, I imagine that people come up to you and probably almost feel like you're part of their family, or they know you, because, you know, for some of us, I think some of these really warm shows, when things were troubled at home, it became like a safe kind of surrogate family to be with Uncle Bill and Sissy and Buffy and Jody, and that must be almost surreal in the sense that people that haven't even met you feel like when they see you maybe at a restaurant, like, you know, thank you, and they look at you as Sister Sissy or something. I mean, that must have been interesting, just, you know, being in public.
Yes, and I've done a lot of autograph shows, and I continue to do so, retro shows, or I did like a lot of Westerns, and it is interesting to me. I mean, sometimes someone will come up and, oh, I loved you on that show. I mean, I've had people come up and see me and recognize and start crying, because it touched such a nerve, I think, in them, and they have such an emotional reaction. Sometimes the show is criticized as saying, oh, well, it was so idealized and, you know, it wasn't as real as it could be. Well, let me tell you, it was real. I mean, there are many shows that have been sitcoms that are like our particular show. I think that there was a lovely camaraderie between all of the characters on the show, and that shone through. And as you say, it was kind of a nice family to see, to forget everything of the day, to feel warm, to envelop someone in love, like a safe haven. And I think I'm very proud of that. I'm very happy that we were able to touch those emotional things in people.
Yeah, it really art is a ministry, and you minister to a lot of people with this show. And, you know, the few people that might say it wasn't edgy enough or whatever, I would just completely disagree. I mean, the very premise is these kids are, you know, orphaned and need taken in by their uncle. And I remember so many of even the storylines where, you know, some rough kids are beating up Jody, you know, and bullying him at school. And how many women like my wife and so many other baby boom women got through life by clutching Mrs. Beasley dolls and those toys? Just, I remember flying off the market in school that most of the girls I played with had to have that doll.
Oh, yes, I did a TV special with Laura Dern, and she came up to me and she says, oh, I loved your show. And, you know, she said, I had a Mrs. Beasley, and she was such a comfort to me when my parents got divorced, and like Bruce Stern, who was just up for the Academy Award. And she says, I was really kind of lost. And it provided, I carried that doll around with me everywhere and slept with it. So thank you. And I said, well, you know, thank you for recognizing that. But that really helped her. And that doll did help. So it was a good thing.
Well, what a blessing. This 30 minutes has just flown by. And for those of you listening, KathyGarver.com, you can keep up with Kathy. And that's spelled K-A-T-H-Y, Kathy Garver, G-A-R-V-E-R.com. And, man, we'll love to have you back, you know, in the fall when the book on ex-child stars and surviving Sissy comes out. It's exciting to kind of hear about that a little bit early, and thank you so much. I'm eternally grateful for your visiting today, Kathy.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure, Richard, and you speak so beautifully, and I didn't know you were a writer, but, you know, some of the things that, I mean, artists and ministry, and some of your quotes are just beautiful, and the above us is the master and artist and director. It has been a blessing for me to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, God bless you and your husband and your son, your family, and we'll all be waiting for that book. Please let us know when it's out so we can get it and tell others about it in the fall.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay, enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
And everybody, thank you for listening. Tomorrow we have an Oscar winner on. I'm very excited. The film 20 Feet from Stardom. My friend Kevin Klauber won an Oscar, was an editor on that film. He'll be here tomorrow, Saturday, on the show at this same blogtalkradio.com/Richard Rossi. He'll be on at 2:30 p.m. And we're so excited. Oh, my God, I'm so excited for Kevin. It was my birthday on Sunday when the Oscars, and my wife and kids took me out, and we were just screaming when he won. We were rooting for him so hard. So he'll be here tomorrow. Until tomorrow, God bless you, and I'm so grateful that you support the show.